pull back from their abusive and brutal types of conduct and ways, and look to the truth of the gospel message as being bona fide, and God called off the dogs. And they had a very short amount of time to make this change in their lives as a nation. But they did it, much as we know, to Jonah's chagrin. So God reads the tapes of people. He decides ultimately their existence when they become so corrupt that he then brings in a whipping post, another nation usually, or others, if not natural catastrophe, to take them out of existence and exchange hands in regards to their real estate otherwise. So, obviously, a nation's morality otherwise plays a big role in regards to their existence. God is long-suffering. He is patient. Some nations you may think, well, how could he let them continue to exist? They have a place in his plan. That's why. H, where we pick up, he controls the history of nations and their demise. Isaiah 44:7. Verse 6, thus says Yahweh, the Lord, the King of Israel, and his Redeemer, the Lord of armies, I am the first and I am the last, the Alpha and the Omega, and there is no God besides me. And who is like me? Let him proclaim and declare it. Any who may attempt the kind of arrogance to put themselves on the level of God. Show your face. Prove yourself. See, is the challenge. So God challenges any who want to take issue in regards to his person, etc. Yes, let him recount it to me in order. Almost a facetious tone in regards to the challenge. From the time that I established the ancient nation, and let them declare to them the things that are coming and the events that are going to take place. Only God possesses omniscience, omnipotence, all-powerful, all-knowing, etc., to know the beginning from the end, the history of nations, when they would come into existence, the direction they will go, all these other things. And then compare chapter 40, verses 21 through 24. Do you not know? Have you not heard? Has it not been declared to you from the beginning? The truth has always been available and manifested on this planet from the beginning, whether people recognize it or not. Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? It is he who sits above the vault of the earth, above his compass, the circle. And his inhabitants are like grasshoppers. As he is pictured here manifested himself in a third heaven, in the throne room, looking upon his creation. He stretches out the heavens like a curtain and spreads them out like a tent to dwell in. He it is who reduces rulers to nothing, who makes the judges of the earth meaningless in all their wisdom, all their decision making. Whatever they decide, understand, God at any time can change that. He can reverse that. He can bring about certain events that undoes truly what they are attempting to do in regards to establishment of law and things of this nature, even the highest of courts on the land, the Supreme Court in our land, etc. They're meaningless in regards to comparison to his person and his will and plan in regards to humanity. Scarcely, verse 24, have they been planted. Scarcely have they been sown. Scarcely has their stalk taken root in the earth. But he merely blows on them and they wither. And the storm carries them away like stubble. It takes no time for God to change history when he so determines. The history of this world is going to change in one of the most dramatic ways ever, apart from the flood. In 1 hour, one day, one of these days. And the whole balance, if you will, of man and their pursuit of prosperity and all these other things in life will be in another world, essentially. Also, chapter 41, verse 2, who is aroused one from the east, whom he calls in righteousness to his feet. He delivers up nations before him. Obviously, the Lord of Lords and King of Kings, and subdues kings. He makes him like dust with his sword, as a wind-driven chaff with his bow. And then Daniel 2:21. Doctrine in Daniel's soul. In providing the answer to the vision, dream. Verse 21 or verse 20, Daniel answered, responded, and said, "Let the name of God be blessed forever and ever, for wisdom and power belong to him." No matter how great the ultimate ruler may be otherwise, it still all belongs to God, ultimately. And it is he who changes the times and the epochs, the eras, the periods. He brings these changes about. He removes kings and establishes kings, or presidents, dictators, you name it. He gives wisdom to wise men and knowledge to men of understanding. And verse 36 and following. This was a dream, an interpretation of Babylon. Now we shall tell you this interpretation before the king. You, O king, are the king of kings, to whom the God of heaven has given the kingdom. Apart from God placing him as an authority, he would not have had that position. The power, the strength, and the glory. And wherever the sons of men dwell, or the beasts of the field, or the birds of the sky, he has given them into your hand, and has caused you to rule over them all. You are the head of gold, and the vision of being none other than Babylon under Nebuchadnezzar. And after you there will rise another kingdom inferior to you. So the prophecy in regards to world empires here looking to the Grecian and Medo-Persian empires to follow. Then another third kingdom of bronze, which will rule over all the earth. So I, Israel, is the only nation promised real estate in perpetuity. For a national entity to have an eternal existence, number one, and specific real estate territory ordained by God to be in their possession, Israel is the only nation that has been given that promise. Micah 4:7. I will make the lame a remnant and the outcast a strong nation under reversion recovery. And the Lord will reign over them in Mount Zion. Looking forward to the millennial period when that reign is established. From now on and forever, a reign that has no ending. And obviously, the reign and existence of Israel forever is seen in Revelation 21 in the eternal state. Even in the new eternal state with the new heaven and new earth, Jerusalem will exist with the reign of Jesus Christ in the city along with God the Father. And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, and the first heaven and the first earth have passed away, and there is no longer sea, body of water, oceans. The new earth will be compiled of terra firma land in its dominance. Doesn't mean that there won't be smaller bodies of water, rivers and things of that nature, as we know there is. But no more oceans, no more seas. Seas consist of the most surface area in regards to the earth today. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, made ready as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice, the New Jerusalem, which has already been created and is sitting in the third heaven right now, waiting for this period of history to come about. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Behold, the tabernacle of God is among men, and he shall dwell among them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be among them. And he will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there shall no longer be any death. There shall no longer be any mourning or crying or pain. First things have passed away." And he who sits on the throne said, "Behold, I'm making all things new." Contamination, the history and universe of which we are a part of today will be completely eradicated, see, done away with. Just as our old body of flesh will be done away with and we'll be receiving a new resurrection body. So we will see for creation, if you will. "I am making all things new," verse 5. "And he said, write, for these words are faithful and true. And he said to me, it is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give the one who thirsts from the spring of water of life without cost." It's free. Life is free. "He who overcomes shall inherit these things," the believer in time. "And I will be his God, and he will be my son. But for the cowardly and unbelieving and abominable and murderers and immoral persons and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars, their part will be in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone." Those things that are reminiscent of unbelievers, which is the second death. One may be that otherwise, but if they believe in Jesus Christ, they will escape that second death because their name is in the book of life, the Lamb's book of life. And one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls full of the seven last plagues came and spoke with me, saying, "Come here, I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb." So the New Jerusalem is created specifically for Jesus Christ and His rule for all eternity. And then, as we know, we have a fairly good description of the New Jerusalem. And the rest of the verses, "And he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain," verse 10, "and showed me the holy city, Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, having the glory of God. Her brilliance was like a very costly stone, as a stone of crystal clear jasper." A diamond type of look. "It had a great and high wall with 12 gates, and at the gates 12 angels. And names were written on them, which are those of the 12 tribes of the sons of Israel." So Israel remains as part of the New Jerusalem for all eternity. But there were 3 gates on the east, 3 gates on the north, 3 gates on the south, 3 gates on the west, noting that there will be directional orientation still in the eternal state. "And the wall of the city had 12 foundation stones, and on them were the 12 names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb." The church is also in memoriam in regard to the New Jerusalem. "And the one who spoke with me had a gold measuring rod to measure the city and its gates and its wall. The city is laid out as a square, and its length is as great as the width, and measures the city with the rod 1,500 miles, its length and width and height are equal." "He measured his wall 72 yards according to human measurement," verse 17, "which are also angelic measurements." So you see this parallel with angels and humans there, just as they speak our language, they also think and reason scientifically, logically, as we do. "And the material of the wall was jasper," verse 18, "and the city was pure gold like clear glass." It was so refined that it is like clear glass, this gold. "The foundation stone of the city wall were adorned with every kind of precious stone. The first foundation stone was jasper, the second sapphire, the third chalcedony, the fourth emerald, the fifth sardonyx, the sixth sardius, the seventh chrysolite, the eighth beryl, the ninth topaz, the tenth chrysoprase, the 11th jacinth, the 12th amethyst. The 12 gates were 12 pearls. Each one of the gates was a single pearl. And the street of the city was pure gold like transparent glass." It's one big oyster. "And I saw no temple in it," verse 22. "For the Lord God, the Almighty, and the Lamb are its temple." The reality of worship is manifested. There is no need of, if you will, any type of structure, symbolically or otherwise, to worship in the eternal state, because the reality is established. "And the city has no need of the sun," verse 23, "or the moon to shine upon it. For the Lord God, the Almighty, and the Lamb are its temple." So those heavenly bodies will no longer, that type or need will no longer be in existence in the eternal state. "The nations will walk by its light, and the kings of the earth shall bring their glory into it." And where we're at in regards to our thinking in this respect is Israel, Old Testament saints, resurrected saints, all resurrected saints, Old Testament, New Testament, Church Age saints, will all be occupants and part of the scene in the New Jerusalem. The nations, all those entities, again, we see nationalism still ordained in the eternal state, are those humans that live during the millennial period in their natural bodies, and they will go into the eternal state in said natural bodies. They will be rendered genetically clean from the DNA of the SCA in this respect, and life and procreation of the human race will continue to exist in the eternal state, and this will go on forever and ever. That's your nations. There is no mention of any resurrection of millennial saints, the reason being because they are resuscitated if they die beforehand. Or they remain alive, and God keeps them alive. Obviously, nothing's impossible with Him, and takes them into this new era of existence. And the kings of the earth shall bring their glory into it. In the daytime, for there shall be no night there. His gates shall never be closed. Time, as we know it, will no longer be divided between night and day. Nothing but go, go, go. And they shall bring the glory and the honor of the nations into it, nothing unclean, and no one who practices abomination lying shall ever come into it, but only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. All right, Roman numeral 2. Now the vocabulary for nationalism or nations. A, in the Hebrew, the primary term is goy, G-O-Y, or the plural goyim, G-O-Y-I-M, which is translated nation or nations in the Old Testament. B, in the Greek, the primary term is ethnos, ethnic, or where we get our word ethnic from, used in the New Testament and the Septuagint for the translation of goy or going. And see, the translations nation or nations in the plural occurs 644 times in the Bible. I guess he didn't want any doubt to be remain in regards to the validity of nationalism. All right, Roman numeral 3 now deals with the origin of the nations, of which we have just been through here in review now. A, and at the time of their origin. 1, prior to the events of Genesis 11, 1 through 9, there were no nations, per se, nothing recorded, at least in that vein. And the events of Genesis 11 obviously is the Babel, Operation Babel event. So, 2, the events of Genesis 11 at Babel follow shortly after the turn of the first century post-flood. The flood, we date around 2298-97 B.C. So, 2198 or so, 97, is the when Babel occurred. The situation there recorded for us is in Genesis 11. All right, 3, Genesis 10:25. Is the lone clue as to the dating, linking it commensurate, should be two words, with the life of Peleg. The name of the one of the sons born to Eber was Peleg, or Peleg. For in his days the earth was divided. So that information was provided for us in the genealogy of chapter 10 out of the line of Shem, and from Eber or Parkshad to Shelah to Eber he had two sons, Joktan and Peleg. And that name means divided. For the name Peleg is from the Hebrew Pelag, meaning divided. So five, the division in view can feasibly be viewed twofold, paralleling the divided continents post-Pangaea, partitioned into national entities separated by language. And we went through there. Commentaries usually lean one way or the other. I don't see why it can't refer to both. Most conservative theologians recognize that it's probably pointing to Pangaea, which our landmass was one solid landmass before the flood. After the flood, the earth became divided, and as we know today, the continents can be put together as a puzzle to make one land mass again. You see it that way. But it also, the word divided also, looks at God dividing the languages in regards to men at the Tower of Babel. And there, that reference specifically is Psalm 55:10, excuse me, where the psalmist says, "Confuse, O Lord, divide, palag, that's our term, their tongues. Mess up their languages," just like he did, if you will, picturing, so that they don't understand one another, that they're confused, as he did at the Tower of Babel. So that term is used specifically in that verse with languages. So my interpretation of his name is it not only looks to the partitioning of the continental divides, but also the partitioning of men into nations via the institution of multi-languages, division of tongues. So six, so that gives us a clue then when we are dealing with the Babel event. So six, that Peleg was named, quote, divided, end quote, at birth, strongly suggests that his birth was after God's judgment on Babel. That makes sense to, unless he was prophetic, obviously he could. The more logical conclusion is that God intervened, jammed their languages, divided into tongues, and sometime shortly after that, Peleg was born, and he was named in memoriam of that, as well as the fact that it points to the continents as they would exist. So seven, from the chronological notes in Genesis 11, 10, and following, in the line of Shem, or Nick's group of genealogy to deal with, Peleg, from that, those notes, Peleg was born 101 years post-flood and lived 239 years, providing a window date of approximately 2197 to 2059 B.C. We can calculate from the time of the flood, 2 years after the flood, from Shem to Arpachshad, and then we're given the number of years that they lived when the other child was born and how long the individual lived after the fact. So we can keep up with the chronology that way. So eight, further, Assyria was established during the time of Nimrod. So back in chapter 10, harmonizing all of this, we saw that Nimrod not only establish his kingdom with new places, beginning with Babel, Erech, and Akkad, verse 10, and Cana, in the land of Shinar. But he also, at some point in time in the future, went forth into Assyria, recognizing that Assyria was obviously established already as a nation. So after Babel, sometime after that, we see these nations starting to formulate. There, the mention to Assyria, giving us the heads up in that respect. And he was responsible for Nineveh and Rehoboth-ur and Calah in the development of those cities within that national entity. So 9, now rabbinical tradition holds to Nimrod by the age of 18, having already led a small army to victory against clan strife. We talk about Nimrod, his physical capabilities, his superiority of tactical abilities, etc., as a hunter, being fearless, etc., as well as subduing men. And it's interesting to see that the Jewish Encyclopedia, dated 2002-2011, that the Jews have long held in tradition that Nimrod was 18 when he had his first military success. So this kid, he was out of OCS really quick, and he became a leader very quick in regards to his life. And from then on, basically his reputation just snowballed with him. So 10, and the reason why we bring this in, if true, it is completely feasible that he rose to power quickly within the first century post-flood, within that first 100 years. And he, in his continued conquest into national Assyria, did not have to be time-consuming of necessity. In other words, you don't need a couple of centuries. You don't need 150-plus years for all this to occur. The population explosion at a certain point, as we know, becomes exponential. If he got off that quick, that young, in regards to his military and professional success, then to rise to power like that, we look at other people in history and what they've done in a short amount of time. Alexander the Great being one. How much he conquered in a short amount of time. See. In a lifespan, what one is able to bring about. So 11, however, we cannot fix a firm date, the exact year. We're just given clues more or less about when it happened. Only to note that nations existed by the time of Terah, as we get into the chronology from the line of Shem to Abraham's father Terah, in 1128, that he lived in Ur of the Chaldeans, which is no later than 2006 BC, or 292 years post-flood. So that went of a couple hundred years in there. We'll put it in. I put all this other in here to document why I lean the way I do in regards to the timing of it. So, B, then we have the historical event itself, what brought about the development of the nations. One, as we know, mankind lived after the flood with a common language, and there was no communication barrier of any kind. Again, in the review of the 11 Chapter 11, verses 1 through 9 of the Babel incident, Operation Tower of Babel. Verse 1, now the whole earth used the same language and the same words. So there is a mother tongue that was a part of the human race. And the consensus among many is that mother tongue was actually the Hebrew language. But we'll see. In that realm, under that umbrella, having a common language, men corporately then migrated to Shinar, verse 2, as the crowds increased through all the babies born over the years, rather than taking off and doing what they're supposed to do and dividing out into different families and clans, they all decided to stick together, and they all left the particular area around the flood, around the area at mountain range, wherever that might have been, present-day Turkey, maybe a little bit further south if they migrated to a certain degree. And then they went on way down south towards southern Iraq. And then it came about as they journeyed east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. So 3, Nimrod, as we know, was the instigator of the migration. And the projected city and tower build, convincing the masses to join him. People were motivated to do what they did, facilitated through their own negative volition and STA, through one particular person, and that would have been Nimrod, who had gained much fame and claim of power, convincing everyone, no, we don't need to separate. We're better off out here in the wilds of this new world to stick together. Make a difference what God said. And once they migrate under his tutelage, his instructions, clinging to him as their security, if you will, in that regards, he then proposes building a city, a tower, that would represent their unity and a one world approach regards to their existence. That was 3 and 4. They said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. They used brick for stone and they used tar for mortar. They said, come, let us build for ourselves a city, a tower whose top will reach into heaven, and let us make for ourselves a name, unless we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. Showing that they joined this rebellion under the Nimrod conspiracy, satanic conspiracy, to not fulfill God's plan in regards to nationalism. So 4, this was in direct violation of the command to repopulate the earth and to subdue it via the Noahic covenant, as we saw all the way back in chapter 9. That was the original command. Verse 1, God blessed Noah and his son, said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Don't go to one place. Fill the earth. Spread out. Spread out. No. I can't. Some things pop in my mind. Those old shows. Verse 7, as for you, be fruitful and multiply. Populate the earth abundantly and multiply in it. So 5, the tower was to be the focal point of their existence. And the details are rooted in the occult mysteries found, as we have brought out, in the mother-son cult. And that was verse 4 of chapter 11. So 6, the plan was to unify all men around the city, its tower, and its religion. So that is the setting and the background in regards to what occurs then after the fact. And that is the result, point C. 1, via omniscience, God knew that a universal race on the planet would eventually unify itself around a false universal religion. The epitome of that, the pinnacle of that expression, has been reserved for essentially the time in which we live, known as the last days. And that is the basic schematic of satanic attack in regards to nationalism. And it all began back with the Tower of Babel, his first attempt to do this. And men had a predilection under negative volition to disregard God's plan and try to be their own saviors of the world, essentially. And that's brought together at the end times via the Antichrist, which Nimrod has been pointed out to be a type of the Antichrist by some theologians. And again, verse 13, or chapter 13 of Revelation, we see how people become unified, and it focuses on a false religion with the economic, political unification essentially almost happening automatically after that. And again, chapter 13, Satan stood on the sand of the seashore and saw a beast coming up out of the sea, out of the humanity, Gentile race specifically, having 10 horns, 7 heads, and on his horns were 10 diadems, and on his head were blasphemous names, that is none other than Alexander the Great. And the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like those of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power, that's Satan, and his throne and great authority. And so this is Satan's big and final attempt at this in regards to our present history. And I saw one of the heads as if it had been slain, and the fatal wound was healed. The whole earth was amazed and followed after the beast. He became a hero. It's kind of, we see now all the comic character heroes now just were being inundated in regards to movies now, in regards to them. There's only one hero, that's the Green Lantern. We all know that. Superman is nothing compared to even a believer in a resurrection body. Superman can see, he's got to break down that wall to get in here. But resurrection body, we just walk right through it. But anyway. And they worship the dragon, verse 4, because he gave his authority to the beast. They worship the beast, saying, who is like the beast and who is able to wage war with him. So the world becomes unified religiously. They provide the right mental attitude and philosophical approach to life for this to occur in rejection of the truth. And there was given to him a mouth speaking arrogant words and blasphemies. Authority to act for 42 months was given to him. Whereas then the half of the tribulational period, 3.5 years, 42 months, the Antichrist is actually possessed by Satan. So they act in tandem, hence the authority given to him, perfectly with his power invested in his Alexander's humanity, Satan's power. And he opened his mouth, verse 6, and blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle, that is those who dwell in heaven. His open animosity is directed towards believers. All those idiots that lived before us. See, now, the way it took this world. Now look at the world. See, now, what better platform as the rapture's already occurred. And now they've got this whole new revision of life going on. There's another instance where God changes history instantaneously. And all who dwell on the earth will worship him, and everyone whose name has not been written in the foundation of the world, the book of the life of the Lamb, who has been slain. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. If anyone is destined for captivity, to captivity he goes. If anyone kills with the sword he must be killed. Here is the perseverance and the faith of the saints. All right, let's take our break.